The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
On News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome along to The Home Show. I'm Sinead Ryan with you here on News Talk for the next hour. Coming up on today's show. Now, we're often considered the friendliest country in the world. So why is Ireland the loneliest place to live in Europe? And what can we do about it? We'll be asking psychotherapist Stephanie Regan. How a few fancy furnishings can greatly increase the price of your house when it goes up for sale. Choosing art for rookies and setting up a study room to get your teenagers ready for an exam year. If you'd like to get involved with us today in our show, contact us. You can do that by email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. You can find me over on Instagram at SineadRyan100 or on X. And remember, of course, you can listen back to any of the items that are coming up or that you might have missed from last week. And they're all up on our podcast, which is also called The Home Show. And that's on newstalk.com or on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Well, the Leaving Cert results are out, and I hope anyone who listening to the show who is doing exams or parents who I actually feel just as sorry for who lived through the stress of their kids doing exams were delighted with whatever points were collected yesterday. And for those whose turn it is next year, they need all the advice they can get. So we are playing our part on The Home Show this week with top designer Denise O'Connor. Now, she's designed more study areas than you can shake a CAO offer at, so she'll be in later on. And if there's anything that will help calm the nerves, well, please do stay with us for that. We have loads more on the show also. Lots of great stuff on, and it's brilliant to have your company this morning. You're very welcome along. Now, being a first-time buyer can be daunting enough. Most of us know next to nothing about buying a house when we go to do it for the first time. But the fun doesn't stop there, because once you have a house, you need to buy things to put in it. And once you get over the furniture and the kitchen and all of that, you are left with, what are we going to do with the walls? And art can be a fantastic design element and a great conversation piece. But how do you get started? And if you're completely put off by going into a gallery, well, don't worry. Stephen Martin is managing director of Merrion Gallery and joins me now in the Home Show studio. You're very welcome along.
Thanks very much, Sinead. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Now, this is one of those things that people, it's a bit like wine, I think. Maybe people know what they like, but they don't know the good stuff from the everyday stuff, right?
Yeah.
And when you're talking about a piece of art, especially an original piece.
Yes.
It can be very expensive to get it wrong.
Yes, it can be indeed.
So what we're looking at is for somebody who has a budget to be going on with, or just fancy something a little bit different, what categories would you put art into for somebody starting out?
So I suppose there's various different categories. So you've obviously got prints and posters and stuff, and then you have the likes of limited edition prints, you've got hand-finished prints, and then, of course, you've got the original paintings, which are generally, as you said, kind of like wine. They're similar to, they're in the category, I suppose, of the eliteness.
Mm.
They're the kind of people that are usually buying them. What we've tried to do is make it kind of accessible to everybody, so that you have the price point starting at 90 euros the whole way up to thousands worth of art.
Now, when you're talking about prints, I mean, look, there's so much out there. There's so much available, and prints are a very cheap way, a very accessible way maybe to get started.
Yes.
But you were talking there about limited edition and hand finished. What does all that mean?
Okay, so limited edition print is really kind of, it's a print, it's edition number of, it can range from anything. So basically the artist will pick an edition number. It can run into the thousands or it can only be 10. It just depends on what the artist wants to do. The more limited it is, the more valuable it's going to be worth, depending on the artist.
So the artist doesn't just have one, they've printed off beautifully, now usually on art paper and all that, they've printed off maybe 100 and you get it marked on by pencil.
Yes.
This is 10 out of 100.
Yeah, so they sign the print, they number it, and then it'll come with a limited edition or a certificate of authenticity. So all limited edition prints should have a certificate of authenticity.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a good start. So they're going to be a little bit more expensive than just kind of the print you buy in a regular shop, a poster. Okay. And then beyond that, hand finished, what does that mean?
So hand finished is where the artist might add hand embellishment. So they'll add paint themselves. So they'll paint in maybe a bit of colour. They'll add maybe dots. They'll add splashes to the painting.
To everyone.
To the print.
Ah,
yes.
Right. So it's unique.
Exactly. Each piece is a one of one. It's a unique piece. Again, they're technically one of one, but usually the artist will do them as an edition of maybe 10. But they are technically one of one because each piece is completely unique and completely different.
Now, I know that, you know, I've heard it said it's better to have knowledge than to have money.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
yeah, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I'd agree with that, but maybe in the art world, that's true. But do you get people, Stephen, sometimes coming into the gallery and saying, you know, who's the next big artist? I want to make an investment.
Yeah, it's the question we get asked the most. We get people ringing all the time and they'll say, hi, I've put together a couple of thousand and I'd like to invest in a piece. We always tell people, buy what you like. There's no, like, by all means, you will, if you buy something you like and it goes up in value, well done, you've gotten lucky. You know, the whole knowledge over the money thing really does pay off. The likes of, say, Banksy is probably the best example to use. A couple of years ago, Banksy set up in Central Park as a bit of a publicity stunt. He put in an elderly gentleman sitting at a stall with his paintings. And each painting was valued at $60 each in Central Park. Thousands of people walked by. Nobody bought them, bar three people throughout the day. One lady bought one as a gift. Each of those three pieces were worth over 100,000 each. And it goes to show that people just, because it wasn't advertised as Banksy, they didn't realise.
So if that was in a fancy gallery with the fellow with the hammer and they would have gone.
Oh, they would have gone for over 100.
Shredded or not.
Yeah. And it was exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it was a pure publicity stunt, like his shredding of it. Yeah. Yeah.
So buy what you like, because, you know, you have to look at this every day.
You do.
In your home. Yeah. And you want to walk in and for something kind of that Marie Kondo moment, it has to spark joy. Or, you know, there's no point in having something ugly and valuable on your wall either, is there?
No, and you want it to be a bit of a talking piece. You want, like, if you're having friends over, you want them to be able to walk in and see it. And that's one of the things about having, it's back to the investment piece. People talk about buying a piece that goes up in value. The reality is they never really sell it because they want to tell all their friends they have it. And when they come in, they can show it to them.
Okay, so that's the first thing. Buy what you like. It's the simplest message and you'll know when you know.
Exactly.
Kind of thing. Okay, and you can only do that by having a look and trawling around and all that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And maybe start with something cheaper until you get your sense of style. Now, the other thing, of course, people like to do when they're doing out their house or getting in new furniture or painting the walls is to have something that matches, you know, with their decor.
Yes, I always advise against it personally. Personally, I think, again, buy what you like and make it fit. If you start matching it to the furniture, as soon as you start changing the furniture, the pictures have to go as well.
Mm.
So what we always say is just pick the right image that you like, preferably something with a bit of colour or something that you'll enjoy looking at every day. Put it on the wall and do this furniture separately as such.
Is there a demographic difference? I presume there is, because there is with everything else, clothing and restaurants and music, between older buyers and the younger buyers.
Yes. So the newer demographic, I suppose, the younger generation are tending to go more towards like a contemporary pop art. A bit more colour, it's more contemporary, it's a bit more vibrant. Where the older demographic generally have gone for the likes of traditional beach scenes or
landscapes
and stuff like that. We found that it's kind of gone a little bit out to an extent. Generally now a lot of the tourists and kind of the older generation are buying the landscapes. But in general, most of our clientele, the younger generation, are buying contemporary pop art.
And in terms of medium, I mean, I love kind of acrylics that thick paint feel. I love the texture. You know, not the watercolours or anything like that. That's just me.
Okay.
But other people then like, you know, something that is very pale and pastely and, you know, impressionistic and beautiful.
Yes.
Photography is an increasingly popular medium though, isn't it?
Very
really
popular.
Good
yes.
photography now I'm talking.
Yes. So I actually spent quite a bit of time just looking for a really good, quirky, fun photographer. And we eventually got one this year. But yeah, it is. It's become very big. Again, the photography stuff can look absolutely amazing on any wall. Again, it's just picking the piece you like that you think is a bit of fun and will work.
Yeah, and people like maybe picking something of a place they've been to or that's special for them, or a beautiful, I don't know, landmark or sunset. Is that what people go for, or is it portraiture?
Yeah, again, it's kind of people will buy it when on holiday. So you might be out in Spain, you're walking down, you see something that might remind you of Spain, or again, a lot of the tourists will buy the landscape scenes here in Ireland, or the, like, say, a Graham Nuttall sheep painting. We sell a lot of those because the Americans will generally buy them. Because,
or the Georgian doors, isn't that
exactly,
a big one?
Georgian
the
doors
pubs.
Is huge. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's the kind of stuff that people.
Okay. Now, of course, that brings us then finally to the question that can make or break a piece of art, whether you've spent a fortune or you've spent a fiver, and that's the frame.
Yes, framing is very, it's one of the most important things, really. The right frame will really make the right painting or the right image. If you get the frame wrong, the problem is buying cheap frames will generally just, they kind of decompose over an 18-month period. And what will happen is they ruin the piece. A lot of people make the first mistake they do is buy a cheap kind of print or something, decide to frame it themselves, put it in the frame. They use normal sellotape. The sellotape then seeps through. You're meant to use a non-acidic tape, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And the frame really will finish off any piece.
Or they, you know, shave around the edge because it doesn't quite fit.
That's exactly it. Or you'll notice gaps in
You're making a horrified face there.
Exactly. I am because even thinking about it.
Okay, it's good. It's triggering you. All right. So get the frame right. And of course, galleries can help with that as well, can't they?
Absolutely.
They can give advice on the type and the colour and the size and all that, because I mean, that's a whole art form in itself.
It is. There's a handful of framers around Ireland and they're really kind of the specialists in it. We can obviously advise on it and send you to the right framer. Like, we have a number of framers that we deal with, so most galleries can facilitate in that way.
All right. Yep. Well, okay, Stephen, thanks a million for coming in and giving us all that advice. Where can people find out more about you?
It's meriongallery.ie.
Fantastic. All right, Stephen Martin, Managing Director of Merion Gallery. Thanks for joining us on The Home Show. Now, a study in the UK revealed that the average buyer spends just 49 minutes viewing a house before deciding to purchase it. Now, that might seem like a remarkably short amount of time to look at something you're potentially going to live in for the rest of your life. But what was even more surprising is that most of the time is spent focusing on what's in the property rather than the house itself. Heat maps have shown that people's eyes are focused on art and furniture far longer than skirting boards and ceilings and windows. So we were thinking, can you use that information, the science bit, to get a better price for your own home if you're thinking of selling up? Staging homes for sale has become big business. So I'm delighted to welcome into studio Claire Callanan, founder of In The Space Interiors. Claire, you're very welcome to the show.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
So what are we trying to do here where we're staging a property? Because, like, there is that kind of, estate agents would say, look, every street has a price. You're not going to get a load more for the house. You know, even sometimes you put in a nice kitchen, you build an extension and people are always surprised by you know, not getting their money back. So staging would seem like perhaps, you know, a luxury too far, but you say different.
Yeah, I suppose we're trying to make staging accessible, I suppose, really, because I mean, not that anybody can stage, essentially. You know, you just need to make sure you're looking at the right things, etc. So I suppose it's really just bringing staging to everybody, because I think people have that idea that it is a huge expense, you know, it's a huge expense and it's only certain people can afford it, etc. But I mean, you can start with the basics, just with, you know, having fresh linen, having nice cushions, that type of thing, cleaning. That's all under the umbrella of staging, essentially.
Yeah, decluttering would seem to be a big one.
Huge.
Because even if we are looking at nosy things like other people's photographs or their taste in art, we don't really want to be tripping over their kids' toys.
Yeah,
or,
100%, 100%.
You know.
I always say to people, you need to put yourself in the buyer's shoes. So take yourself out of the equation and say, if I was to come into this property, what would I want to see? What would I like? What would I not like? And I suppose start there and try and take yourself out of the home that you've lived in maybe for 30 years, which is quite hard. And I suppose that's where we come in then as well, is just to help you do that.
So that would mean then, if somebody's thinking of buying, the kind of the clearing out and the decluttering maybe starts even before it's put on the market.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, yeah, I think 100%. I think there's a lot of work that people can do before engaging a stager. And I suppose it's maybe just thinking more about one of the main things I think that we forget a lot is who is your target market. So we'll say, for example, if you're a first-time buyer or if you're trading down or if you're a family, they're all different. They'll want different things from a property. So I suppose it's really thinking as to who's going to be your buyer and what would they want. So we'll say if you're a first-time buyer, you might not have the time or the budget to do a lot of refurbs afterwards. So then the more work that the seller can do beforehand, it'll be a quicker sale and easier sale. You'll get a better sales price.
So to make it look like a turnkey property, even if not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So give us some practicals then about what we're looking to do. I mean, I suppose you start at the front door, really.
Yeah. We always say start at the gate. It sounds basic, but honestly, you'll be so surprised how people don't even think about that. So yeah, starting at the gate and what is your first impressions are everything. And I suppose staging essentially is a marketing tool. And as you know, marketing, it's first impressions. It's what's that hook that gets you in. If you think about if you're scrolling through Instagram, you could scroll through 50 million and then one thing will catch your eye. So I suppose it's similar to staging and similar to property. So you need to get that first impression right. So it's your garden, your porch, you know, all that type of thing. You know, making sure the front of the house looks well. If it's an apartment, what's your entrance like, etc. So starting there and then moving in, really.
And I suppose one of the impressions you want to give is that you've cared for this property.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
If it looks like a total mess and there's stuff lying all over the place, maybe the buyers will think, you know, maybe they weren't on top of the maintenance or looking after the dry rot or whatever.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, it might sound cheesy, but you're essentially selling a dream. You know, you're buying your property, you're buying your future. So if you think about it that way.
Yeah. You don't have to go all Selling Sunset on get up in your slinky dress and your
exactly.
Manolos, no?
But that's how I do it. That's how I dress when I do my job. But I think it comes down to the fact that if you're buying a house, it's your future. So what does that person not want to see? What do they want to see? I mean, it sounds basic, but just taking things out of the way, freeing up space, etc.
And of course, there's great units now that you can rent, like storage units, and put all your kind of heavy stuff and your personal stuff. Like, you don't want people rifling through. I remember when I sold a house a few years ago, and the last thing I wanted to do was the notion people were pulling open the doors in my bedroom.
Yeah,
you know,
and people do.
Yeah,
people do.
And I remember we had Dermot Bannon in here once, and he said he used to tip his underwear drawer into a box and carry it around in the boot of his car while everybody was viewing the house. I'm not sure now.
Not surprised me.
If the Irish Indo or the Times would have been interested in that story, but who knows? Okay, so for people then maybe who have gone to that effort, they've cleared it out, cleaned it out, tidied up, because there's always that kind of balancing act, Claire, between do I invest money by painting it up or changing the carpets, or am I better off? Is that a waste of money?
I think it depends on the property, to be honest with you. If it's a property that we'll say it's in disrepair, we'll say, and whoever buys it will gut it anyway, then I wouldn't advise to spend money on things like painting when you know they'll come in and they'll just got the place anyway. You know, I wouldn't really advise it in that sense.
And of course, state agents would sometimes refer to those as executor sales.
Yeah.
So these may be elderly people who haven't really changed the house maybe in a couple of decades.
Yeah,
it's been vacant for a while. Okay.
Or it could be a smaller house on a row of houses, and you can see the ones that have been extended, people have come in and redone them, and then maybe this one, like you say, would have been an elderly person.
Okay.
And you know, I wouldn't, you know, so you wouldn't advise it there.
You'd say take the hit on not doing it up.
I think it's very, I don't want to blanket coat it.
Yeah.
Because then people will say, well, I heard not to do that. But I think it's very dependent on the property.
Okay.
And I think your estate agent will guide you there as well. You know what I mean? Because obviously they're the guys on the ground. They know.
Now, in terms of, so if you've cleared it out and you're lucky enough to have a kind of a pretty vacant home, in other words, maybe you've moved or you're in the process of doing it or you're living renting elsewhere, that leaves you with a blank space. Now, you know, if you get in a stager like yourself, what kind of things are you aiming to put in different rooms then, just to kind of showcase it, if you like?
Yeah, so I suppose essentially we'll go in and you're essentially serving the property and we'll go in and it's fresh eyes as well. So it's what are the highlights? I suppose it depends on, like, do you have a great back garden? You know, do you have loads of light in the kitchen? You know, do you have a really nice bedroom that could be a master? So you're really looking at the highlights. But on the flip side, then you're also looking at maybe things that aren't as appealing, and how can we,
cover them up?
Yeah, I know. I'm afraid of what to say here. I don't want to say anything negative, but I suppose, look, we'll say if the lighting mightn't be
minimize
great,
them
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll put in lamps, so you're kind of, you're looking at what are the highlights, but you're also looking at how can you elevate things that maybe, you know, if a room is dark, we'll get lamps in there. If a room is kind of small, you might put a mirror in there to reflect the light, those types of things.
Yeah, but you're not putting in a whole load of stuff to kind of create a family home, or
yeah,
are
we
you?
Would. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we go anything from a one bed apartment up to a four or five bed house. So all in would be every room fully staged, turnkey.
And does that mean then that you rent all that furniture just for the period of time of sale? Is that how it works?
Yeah, okay. So we, at the moment, you 10 to 12 weeks would be the rental period. So we'll say, you give me the keys, you have a beautiful property and you want us to fully stage it. So we'll be probably, if it was a four bed, in and out in maybe 4 or 5 days. And that'd be full stage, everything done. We give you back the keys, ready to launch. And then from then on, it's usually a 12-week rental that we would do, because you'll probably go sale agreed in 2 to 3 weeks. But it's the waiting around afterwards and waiting to contracts get signed and that type of thing. So that's kind of how it works in Ireland at the moment. We do leave it in for the full 12 weeks.
Tell me what difference it makes to the bottom line. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it can look pretty. In fact, it might look so pretty you'd think, oh, I've changed my mind. I don't move out now at all. But what practical difference can it make?
It makes a huge difference. I suppose, first of all, from the get-go, you've got better marketing material. So if you think of you're launching your house in its peak condition, you've everything perfect. You're already on a forward foot there. So you're getting better marketing, better pictures, better videos. And as you know now, everything's, it's all Instagram. Agents are on, they're doing TikTok. So I think everything's much more consumable. So it's not just Daft anymore. It's and other sites. It's everything. You know what I mean? So you're already on a better foot there. Mm. That would be the first thing. Second of all, then when the ad goes up, I mean, you're going to get more clicks. You're going to get more buyers interested. You're going to get more viewings. The estate agent is going to get more interest, and that's a proven fact. And if you think about it as well, especially in Dublin, you'll have other properties that are similar to yours on the market, and it's about standing out as well from them, and then when it comes to the sale, it's always a quicker sale. So stage properties usually sell within 2 to 4 weeks of being on the market versus it could be 3 to 4 months with a non-stage property. So that's kind of what we see, and you will get a better sales price as well.
So
in my experience.
So the tip is that, I mean, I suppose ultimately then what you're aiming for is that the uplift pays for you. Is that it?
The uplift pays for me and more, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you do see, like, on average, you could be looking at 5 to 15% over the asset.
Wow, okay, okay. And what are the biggest mistakes that people make when they are maybe looking to sell their house? And I'm thinking here maybe of maybe trying to cram in too much furniture. Or, leaving things untidy or having kind of last night's curry smells in the air. Is it really about clean and tidy first?
Yeah, and it sounds basic and it sounds, but genuinely, clean and clean some more. Mm. Because if you think, if you're coming into somebody's, you want to see freshness, you don't want to smell anything a bit strange. You want to see something fresh because it's going to be your future home. Mm. So the less clutter, the less, I suppose, of somebody else, which sounds awful, you can see, or, that's basic. That we would always say that's the basic thing.
So at the very least, do that.
Exactly.
And have it good
100%.
Clean. Get
and
the teens up, out, made their beds and out of the house.
Out.
Nobody lounging
kitchens,
on their...
bathrooms have to be spotless. Because kitchens, if you think about it, you're in there all day cooking. Mm. And I can categorically say buyers will not make an offer on a house if a kitchen turns them off or a bathroom.
Really?
They're the two... back on that a lot.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And we would do a lot of bathroom refurbs, not huge money, but just, enough to kind of get it up to spec and stuff. And it makes a huge, huge difference. So cleaning and decluttering would be the top two that don't cost a huge amount.
Yeah, just a bit of time. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, listen, Claire, thanks a million for all of those tips. Market busy at the moment?
Yeah. Nice July quietness where we all took a bit of a break and now it's gone back on again.
Back on again.
Yeah, so it's great. Yeah.
Right, until the beginning, the end of the year. All right. Yeah. Now, where can people find out more about you, Claire?
Our website is inthespace.ie. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn. Not on TikTok yet. I know.
The Taoiseach, I think it's about going to become the law.
I know.
Everybody has to be on the TikTok.
I'll have to retire.
All right. But that's Claire Callanan, founder of In the Space Interiors. And thanks a million for all those staging tips.
Thanks so much.
Now, earlier this summer, the Joint Research Centre report on loneliness in the EU showed that Ireland is the loneliest place in Europe. 20% of Irish people reported feeling lonely most or all of the time, and that's well above the EU average of 13%. What is it about the way we live in this country that is causing such a problem? And more importantly, what can we do about it? Well, Stephanie Regan is clinical psychotherapist and author of Relationships on the Edge and joins me now. Stephanie, this is a little shocking, this data.
Yes, it is a little shocking. I would completely agree with you. And maybe shocking and maybe, you know, a little shock that can make us do something positive out of it, as opposed to, you know, paralyzing us in some way. I think, you know, we take it for granted, don't we, in Ireland, you know, that we are lots of friendly people. We're up for the crack and the chat and we're easy to talk to and all of that. But where is it all getting us if people are still feeling very isolated and very alone? I think that's the takeaway here, isn't it?
It is. It's a bit of an indictment, I suppose, on how we go about our business. But of course, being lonely and being alone are two different things. Isn't that true?
Yes, well, that is true, because people can be quite happy alone and feel self, you know, self-contained and peaceful and all of that. But being lonely is different, is really is where there is a longing and a need for others and a feeling of need for others. And of course, we really know that there are very negative impacts, both at a physiological level, physical level, and at a mental and emotional level, that people are higher, you know, in a higher likelihood area of risk for depression, for anxiety, for other physical ailments, you know, like cardiac situations and all of that. There you are more inclined to that, you know, when you are in that lonely group. So we really do need to think about it in a different way. I think that's what this makes me think, that we can talk about people being lonely and we can do the kind of reach out and the calls in and all of that. And that's sort of been that reactionary kind of way to deal with it. But I think it needs to be turned around on its head slightly. And we need to think about, how do we include people in all phases of life? How do we work towards that, as opposed to waiting for people to be in the category of loneliness and then responding to that?
Mm. And I wonder then how our communities have changed. Because I mean, it can't have always been that way. I don't think there is a sense that Ireland was always the loneliest place in Europe. Quite the opposite, I would have thought.
I would have thought so, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to wonder maybe whether it's a mix of demographics, whether it's maybe stuck in our phones all day. COVID would have had an impact. Yeah, is it just that maybe society just doesn't facilitate that pulling people together naturally?
Yes. Well, I think we have to say religion and mass was a big feature in Ireland, and it is less so now. And it definitely always drew people in the community together. I think that is largely, you know, now considerably lessened. And I think really the church going is the population of church going people has considerably dropped. That's a factor, I would say. I think people online working is a factor. I think people, of course, moving to the cities, they're the normal kind of, you know, factors that are going on in every country. But why are we that little bit lonelier than other countries might be? You know, because they all have those factors as well, if you think about it. But I think there's something in the Irish, if you like, in the Irish self, which is that we take it for granted that we have a lot of people around us, and we perhaps don't do the reach out that other countries, you know, are more used to doing. Maybe it's because they are more used to having to make an effort to make friends. They don't take it for granted. And I think there is a little bit of that going on in Ireland myself.
Do you think that there's a bit of a stigma around admitting that you're lonely? I mean, we've kind of got out of the, you know, thankfully, a lot more people are prepared to say my mental health isn't great at the moment, or my physical health isn't good. But is there less of a chance of saying, actually, do you know what, I just feel really lonely?
Oh, I think, yeah, I think loneliness, people are very, very slow to say it. And I think they do equate it with a kind of a social failure. And that, of course, is really wrong, because there are so many phases in life where somebody or people step away, or you've transitioned. You know, young mothers with children can be quite lonely because they're, you know, pulled away from their normal kind of connection points. So there's many reasons why it happens. Of course, seniors, and that is for sure a sort of a very specific group who have vulnerabilities around loneliness, because they're not going to work anymore. They really have to make an effort to connect. They have to do it in an intentional way. But the earlier you learn that, I think the better. You know, to be intentional. I talk a lot about making friends and all of that. And I think we really need to encourage, you know, children in school, you know, on this sort of pathway, how to make friends, how to reach out, how to respond, how to how to constantly broaden our kind of social network, if you like. Because sometimes you will see people, they make quite little effort. They feel they have one or two and they're okay with that. But that one or two can become zero quite quickly. Mm. And you can find your... I mean, I often meet people where maybe a sister has died or somebody, and the person might have been their kind of their whole social life. You know, they'd go shopping with them. Then they would go out with them. And then when that person goes, you know, you just... sort of over-reliant on the one. So we do need to spread out our connections in that sense.
And is it important then kind of how, okay, most of us, if we're lucky, we have a couple of really good friends. They're the ones you can call up at 4 a.m. if something goes wrong. But is it important to then just to have groups or maybe disparate acquaintances? You know, maybe yes. People you share a hobby with or people correct. That you just meet in the neighbourhood. And yeah. Do they kind of count, if you like, towards alleviating that?
They count extremely well. They count, you know, there's been some really interesting research done. It's the big longitudinal study in Harvard about people's happiness and well-being. And what was shown in that was that connection, almost like our food map, I think of it like a social map, that we have diverse, varied, and many levels of intensity, if you like. Intensity sounds maybe the wrong word, but many levels of connection. In other words, it can be close, it can be medium, it can be just an acquaintance where you talk to the girl in the shop or the person in the cafe. And all of these have a huge value for both the receiver and the giver, if you like. Mm. And so I really encourage people on that. You know, it's reach out in the day, in your life at home. Phone calls, for example, an 8-minute phone call has been shown to be as valuable to both the receiver and the giver as an in-situ meeting, like going out for dinner together.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Because in 8 minutes, you really, you know, if you settle in and you promise each other the call, let's have a catch up, let's have a proper catch up. And you kind of book the time together, if you like. That has a real value. And impromptu connecting has a greater value, actually, than we often think. You know, we find that people now are slow to pick up the phone. They feel, oh, it's an intrusion. You've got to kind of always make the time, you know, or you might feel, or make an appointment, I mean, or you might feel, people often report feeling as well that they're afraid that the person won't want them, or they'll have to explain that it's so long since, you know, I have to explain my absence, why I didn't call you for 6 months. Mm. But in fact, the research shows that's not what happens. People actually feel this huge lift from being remembered out of the blue and chosen to be spoken to and chosen, you know, to be remembered. So there are obstacles in people's minds that I think they can put down and lay aside. And, you know, I really do encourage that. Make the phone call, connect with the people you know, like consolidate the relationships that you have. People often let them slide, you know, they don't reach out, check in. How are things? You don't have to always have a dinner. It doesn't always have to be a meetup. It can be something that just bridges that gap. Mm. People who are, it's not just older people who are mentally, you know, under pressure. I find, you know, just a phone call, sometimes even just a text. I know you're going through a difficult time. How are things going for you? That's of huge value. And so we have to be really proactive on that. And of course, I mean, I think in communities, we could do an awful lot more as well to combat loneliness.
Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and author of Relationships on the Edge. Thank you so much for joining us on that very disturbing study, actually, from the Joint Research Centre report on loneliness. Now, yes, unfortunately, summer has almost passed and it is hard to believe, but here we are in time for the kids to get back to school. Congratulations to all of the Leaving Certs who collected their results, and while they wait on their college offers to drop, there will be great excitement, I'm sure, and angst and all that kind of thing. And of course, the junior certs have yet to drop. I think I heard they were the end of September, maybe even the beginning of October, which seems an awful long time away. But if your son or daughter is about to enter an exam year, then a decent study area at home is going to be all important. And here to tell us what we need to know is somebody for whom study areas have become a way of life. She's probably done more of them, then you have had CAO offers. Denise O'Connor of Optimise Design, you're very welcome.
Thank you,
the Home Show. Are you an exam mom?
Yes, I have. My youngest is about to go into junior cert year. So yes, it's all ahead of me.
Okay. Well, I presume this bit is ship shape, I'm sure.
The room is organised about him now. That's the other side of it.
Listen, there's only so much you can do, exactly. Right? You can do your job and then say, that's it, that's me out of here. That's not going to happen, though. All right. Well, listen, I know that this is an area that interests you as a result and lots of parents, because they're thinking, if I can get a clear study space somewhere in the house, then they're not going to be cramming up the kitchen table, complaining that they've nowhere to study, complaining that they can't see and it's a mess and all this kind of thing. So I presume in the first place, where possible, we're talking about what also doubles as their bedroom. Would that be mostly what people
for
use?
Most kids, yeah, it is, truthfully. Like, most people don't have the luxury of a separate room that they can dedicate to studying, especially now with people working from home. Most spare rooms are taken up. So it usually would involve some space in their bedroom. Mm. And it's nice for them too, because it means all their stuff is where they know, you know, where to find it and stuff like that. Mm. So it does tend to work well.
Yeah, I used to, in my last house, when I had a leaving cert and a junior cert in the same year, so that was very bad family planning, I used to bemoan the fact that I didn't have one of these big open plan kitchens. And I said, someday I'll get a big open plan kitchen. But as it was, I had a kitchen and then a separate dining room. But actually, I was absolutely thrilled for the study years, because that just became the study room.
Yeah, and they can leave their stuff. And I think that's really important. You know, letting them spread it out, letting them work in a way that's comfortable for them, because not everybody is the same. So, you know, what worked for me isn't necessarily going to work for my son. And I know my youngest fella in particular is very visual. So he loves to see everything spread out. So he needs quite a bit of space, whereas other kids are much more organized and they wouldn't need as big a space. So important to kind of tailor it to each child.
So that means involving them, having a conversation about what it is they want, what's their wish list, and then you can kind of negotiate with that into here's what we can do list.
Exactly. And hopefully then that helps them, you know, and it helps them sort of see a way forward rather than just resisting and, seeing it as a...
So, look, you're going to now do the parenting bit first, right? And that's going to be trying to have this conversation about reducing distraction, technology, the phones, the gadgets, and of course they are going to say perfectly reasonably, I need all of those to study.
Those things to help.
What about the breaks, Mom? I need all my breaks.
I think the easiest way to tackle that is to separate the tech as much as you possibly can from the space that they're going to study in. Because they do need their downtime, and a lot of it is with technology, online, gaming, whatever that might be. So look, that is just a part of how they unwind. But as long as it's all not in their bedroom, then it's not going to be a distraction. So if you can negotiate a way to sort of separate the two, I think that's probably a reasonable way forward.
Okay, right. Now, of course, we're kind of in a space which may not be very big, and we have to have a bed, and we have to have a locker, and we have to have wardrobes, and we have to have a desk table. So when we're talking about appropriate furniture, what we absolutely have to have, and how we can be a little bit creative with that, what do you recommend?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is the chair is really important. And, you know, as long as it's something comfortable, I think the easiest thing is people grab a chair from a kitchen or stuff. But like, kids are going to be sitting in these chairs for long periods of time. So just make sure it's comfortable. Make sure it's something that sort of fits them as well, because that's the other thing. Like, I know my little fella has grown so much over the summer. So it, you know, maybe look at the furniture that's in the room. Is it still appropriate for them? Can they comfortably sit at the desk? Because what you don't want is that they're just going to become really uncomfortable and then not use that space. So the chair, I would say, is probably the most important thing.
Okay, so a stool is out.
Exactly.
And then presumably you need something with a good, strong back on it.
A good back, and just something that's appropriate size. Like, I know a lot of people might have chairs that would have been there from when the kids were much younger. So they're just not going to be suitable for them now as they're getting bigger.
Okay. And actually, maybe bringing your son or daughter out to a shop and saying, look, here's our budget.
Yeah.
Find a chair that works for you, that you're comfortable in, that's upright.
Yes.
And it might then encourage them maybe to sit in it a bit more.
Exactly. Right. Hopefully.
Right.
A bit more buy-in.
So working out solutions together, what do you normally find when you're looking at this area that kind of, if you were to ask the kids and money was now, like, what are the kind of things that they would say that they need?
I think a lot of times it's something like a whiteboard, something that they can write up in the wall, they can get markers that they can really get creative. I know a lot of kids find that really helpful for things like maths, for example, working out maths problems, being able to just visualize things up there. Because
okay.
It can be really hard when you're sitting there with little books or you have a lot of books on the table and not a lot of space. So for some reason, just being able to see things up and just at a larger scale can really help them. Other things that are helpful are things like pin boards, notice boards for pinning up things to remind them about things, especially critical dates. Like as it gets closer to the exams, there's going to be a lot of things coming up and that can be a bit overwhelming. So having a space where they can pin up things and start planning things and just clear their mind visually, I think that can be really helpful.
Mm. Okay, yeah, the whiteboard is a great idea because, you know, this is still a written exam.
Yeah.
For six or seven subjects.
Yeah.
And, you know, writing things down rather than looking at them on a screen can be really helpful, maybe in helping the memory and all that. Okay. Now, make sure the room is healthy.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
So in terms of ventilation, you know, have you got issues with damp, mold? You know, if your child is going to be spending long periods of time in the room, is it appropriate to spend a lot of time in there? So just get things like that fixed, like make sure the windows work properly. Any issues with mold, try and get those sorted out. Make sure the heating works properly. Like if you're sitting for periods, like we'll all know, even working from home, you can get cold. You feel really, really cold. So it can just be uncomfortable and mean that they may lose focus, just harder for them to work in the space.
Sometimes I found in the past that a teenager's bedroom can look like a branch of IKEA, right? All the cups and plates and forks and knives that make the way up from the kitchen to the bedroom, right? All in the name of, I need sustenance while I'm studying.
Yeah, yeah.
And I took to putting a tray outside the door. I said, okay, you don't even have to bring it downstairs. Just get it out of the room.
That's a great idea.
Because you had that kind of, my support would go so far. I'll make you the sandwich and I'll bring the plates downstairs, but you have to get them from your desk outside the door. I'm not going to go in and invade your space. And it is that kind of having bits of crumbs and food and snacks and crisp packets and all that. That doesn't aid anything really.
No, and I think a clear, uncluttered space is going to help them focus. Even if they're the type of kid that seems not to notice that, if their room is constantly like a bomb site, honestly, it really will impact them. Like if they can walk into the space and everything they need is there, it's easy to put their hands on, there's less visual distraction, it's going to help every single kid, no doubt.
Yeah, and sometimes actually the best shop, you know, is an office supply shop maybe for,
you
know, pen holders and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we're in a bedroom more often than not, or perhaps a corner of another family room.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the issues then is going to be a desk or a furniture that isn't necessarily going to be used all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So have you any solutions that we could kind of, you know, get rid of them at other times when it's needed, or to create a bit more space back into the bedroom when the study time is over?
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, obviously the more expensive option would be to go for something bespoke. So if you can get something that's custom built to fit into an alcove, like we've had them made in, say, alcoves, even in living rooms, where the whole thing folds back, it becomes a really nice desk that you can actually pull out and extend to make it even bigger. And then everything gets closed and hidden away when people are in there using the room, watching TV. You can do a similar thing in bedrooms, because sometimes it's nice to be able to shut the door on all the study stuff. So when they are in their room relaxing, it's not to the forefront of their mind. They can actually switch off mentally as well. So that can be really nice. But then there are brilliant sort of collapsible desks you can get, fold out desks, you know, similar to the ones, those old dining tables you might remember
that sort of
collapse against the wall.
Or with a kind of a gate leg.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So those sorts of things can work really well if you're really tight on space. And then just smaller furniture that can just fold away and be tucked away will work as well.
And in terms of then closing off the space visually, because I think it can be quite annoying if you're trying to get to sleep, or, you know, and so stuff is buzzing around in your head because you've got, you know, tests and exams and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're constantly looking over at this desk and seeing piles of unfinished assignments or projects that aren't done.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you do that? Is, you know, you wouldn't normally fit a screen or something like that. Is there another way to kind of just get rid of it if needs be?
A really simple way is to have boxes for each subject and just put the books and stuff into each of those boxes and designate a few shelves in the wardrobe space to okay. hide them away. So just clear the decks, keep the desk nice and clean. Maybe it's just got a lamp on it so you're not looking at them, but at least everything is kept together. It's all super organized. Label the box, English, whatever it is, maths, and then you can pull it out and it's all still there. It's all still together. So something as simple as that. You don't even have to go out and buy anything. You could use old shoe boxes, boxes you have lying around the house. So again, it's just sort of looking for what you have to hand and making it as easy as possible to sort of use and reuse.
Yeah, that's great, because most of us have stuff in the wardrobe that's just, we just haven't bothered taking moving it out seasonally. So even if you move all the shoes out or this half of the wardrobe and then reuse, reutilize it. All right, okay. So the best of luck, Denise, with your year coming up.
Thank you so much.
I can't say I miss it.
No, I know.
And listen, what do you say to kids now waiting on their offers? There will always be an offer.
There is.
There will always be an offer and it all works out. And I don't know if you always wanted to be an interior designer when you left school.
Yeah, architecture, that's the only thing I ever wanted to do. So that did make it easier, I have to say. So I really do feel for kids who aren't sure what they want to do, because it's so hard.
All right. Well, then that's good to know. I became a journalist very much in later life.
Brilliant.
And sure, I'm only a few years doing this job. What can you do? I'll find a proper job someday. I promise. All right. Denise O'Connor from Optimized Design. And you can check out Denise's Instagram feed, which is always very helpful. Lots of little stories there. And of course, you've got your column in the Irish Times as well. So people can check that out and look at it. Great. Okay. And we'll see you again next time. And best of luck to your son and indeed everybody now waiting on offers and for the junior certs on results. They don't really matter. Now, that's all we have time for on the show. I hope you've enjoyed the mix of items that we've had. If you've enjoyed the show and there's somebody you know maybe who you think would like to listen to the home show or maybe catch it on occasion, please let them know. We're always interested in having new listeners on board. And thank you for your company today and indeed always if you're a regular listener. We will see you all again next week, of course, because we're here every week. Thank you to producer Aidan McKelvey, Simon Keane. Researcher was Rory Galvin and Stephen McClune was on sound. And we will see you all again next week.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan.
With Mila.
Saturday morning at 8. On News Talk.